Welcome, friends, to this 2016 Swarthmore Lecture.
It has been the tradition for the previous year's lecturer to introduce the lecture the following year. The more observant amongst you will have noticed that I am not Diana Francis.
And neither am I. My name is Anne Floyd.
And my name is Harry Albright.
We are both members of the Swarthmore Lecture Committee, which is appointed by and responsible to the Woodbrook trustees. We are introducing the lecture tonight because we have been working with the lecturers as their appointed friends.
You will have noticed, too, that there is only one lecturer, Esther Mombo, on the stage with us tonight. Unfortunately, Cecile Nyiramana, who was to deliver the lecture with Esther, cannot be with us this evening.
Cecile had applied for a UK visa in good time, and it was granted. Unfortunately, her passport was lost somewhere between the UK consulate in Pretoria, South Africa, where the visa application had been processed, and her home in Kigali, Rwanda. Obviously, without a passport and the accompanying visa, she could not travel.
Cecile is devastated, and we ask you all to uphold her, as you uphold Esther, who is now speaking for both of them. This was a true collaboration between Esther and Cecile, and although Esther will now be delivering the lecture, Cecile's contribution to what you are about to hear has been significant, and her story and experience will shine through. Cecile is with us in spirit and in her words.
The Swarthmore Lecture is the responsibility of the Woodbrook Quaker Study Centre. It's been given at the time of yearly meeting every year but one since 1908. The purpose of this public lecture is to explore and interpret the life, beliefs, and witness of the Religious Society of Friends, both to ourselves and to the wider world. Any opinions expressed are the lecturers alone. The committee seeks to discern topics and lecturers that will be relevant to the life of our yearly meeting, and it makes decisions 2 or 3 years in advance, so lecturers have plenty of time to prepare. You can look on the Woodbrook website for details about how you can contribute to the discernment about future lectures.
Traditionally, lecturers have been asked to write a book, which is usually more substantial than the spoken lecture. However, the Swarthmore Lecture Committee has decided to explore different ways of making supporting materials available for the digital age. The committee discusses with the lecturers which events and materials will help others engage with their work most effectively. This year, we will be issuing the text of the lecture in booklet form. You will be given a card as you leave to pre-order. For the first time in its history, the lecture is being live streamed on the Woodbrook YouTube channel. From Monday, you'll be able to listen to the lecture on the Woodbrook website, and we intend to make a subtitled video available in a few weeks' time. Tomorrow, there will be an opportunity to meet Esther for a question and answer session from 12:30 to 1:30 in the small meeting house. She will also be leading a weekend course at Woodbrook from the 10th of June to the 12th of June.
As you realize, preparing for this lecture has taken us into uncharted territory, including the extra costs involved in working with friends at such a distance. Woodbrook initiated a fundraising appeal to offset these extra costs, to which friends and others gave generously, and we are extremely grateful for those contributions from all of you. Any money raised that is not needed for this lecture will be used to help sustain the lecture in the future.
At this point, may we remind you to please switch off all mobile phones and other electronic devices. This year's lecture, Mending Broken Hearts, Rebuilding Shattered Lives, Quaker Peacebuilding in East and Central Africa, will be given by Esther Mombo, and it is, as we said, a collaboration between Esther and Cecile Nyarmana. It is the first time that the lecturers have been African. The lecture draws on Esther's and Cecile's own experience of the Quaker peace-building work in the region, and it will consider what is required for peace work to be sustainable. You will also hear the words of other friends in the region who have also been actively engaged in this work. These are read by Anne and myself. As you listen, we invite you to consider how some of the problems described have echoes in our own society here in Britain, and how some of the tools and methods you will hear about can be used in our own communities.
Now we would like to introduce Esther and Cecile to you. Harry and I would like to say what a joy and a privilege it has been to work with these two remarkable women over the past 2 years. Esther comes from Kenya. She is a member of the Highlands Yearly Meeting, one of 23 in Kenya. She is by profession a teacher and by academic discipline a theologian, specializing in theological education. Esther is in great demand as a speaker and gave the opening keynote address at the Friends World Committee for Consultation World Conference held in Kenya in 2012. In her professional life, she has worked for the last 25 or so years in various social services, especially in education, in church-based institutions. In her working life, she has focused on how conflict and violence impact on the family, the church, and society. She has been engaged in seeking to make education accessible to all, since she believes that an educated people are less vulnerable to being manipulated by those who abuse power. One of the most influential figures in her own spiritual and peace journey is her grandmother, Enisi Mugesia Mukutu. As a preacher in her local meeting, and among the four women of her time recognized for prison ministry, she was widely admired. Her life reflected almost the perfect integration of the old world and the new. She practiced enculturation before the word was used and instituted in the study of theology. Esther learned a lot about Quakerism, both in Britain and in Kenya, from her. From the oral histories of both sides of her family, Esther learned endless fascinating stories of conflict, of intentional harm to the other people, of needless suffering, especially by women and children, of injustice, of efforts at peacemaking and reconciliation, of acts of forgiveness and restoration, of prolific productive periods of peace. This lived frame of reference provides her with a spiritual, intellectual, and emotional lens through which she has over the years formed her own impressions, understanding and opinions of being a woman, about being religious, about conflict, and about what ought to constitute peace. It is against this background that she discusses the issues of peace and peace building among Quakers in East and Central Africa.
Cecile Nyarimana is from Rwanda. She has been clerk of Rwanda Yearly Meeting since 2014. And has been involved in peace building since 1999. She subsequently earned a degree in clinical psychology to help people to deal with the trauma in the aftermath of the 1994 Rwanda genocide. Cecile has served with the church since 2000 in the Women's Peace Programs and then at Friends Peace House, which brought together the survivors and the released prisoners. Friends Peace House also extended a peace education program to all the districts of Rwanda, as well as supporting peace clubs in the Quaker schools. Since 2012, Cecile has worked with African Leadership and Reconciliation Ministries to transform and reconcile communities. Along with many Rwandans, the 1994 Tutsi genocide affected Cecile in many different ways. Fortunately, helped by the Friends Church in Rwanda, she started to see the signs of hope and decided to do peace work. This is how, in 2001, she started to bring together the widows of genocide victims and the prisoners' wives to facilitate healing and reconciliation. Most of the members of her church told her that it would be in vain, but Cecile was committed to accompany the process of reconciliation between the two blocs, which were supposed to be enemies. Using tools that will be described during the lecture, the women released their anger and sorrows, forgave each other, and decided to work together to bring a message of peace and reconciliation. Some of their husbands have confessed, been forgiven, have come back to their families, and are living peacefully with the survivors. These groups are serving as a good example of reconciliation in their respective communities. In Gichumbi and Muzanzi districts, they received an award from the National Commission of Unity and Reconciliation for working successfully on reconciling relationships. Cecile's contribution to the lecture comes from the knowledge and experience derived from these successes.
The lecture is conducted in the spirit of worship. Esther will speak out of the stillness when she is ready. And at the end, we will return into the silence, without applause and without questions or discussion. The opportunity for that will come tomorrow.
Anne and I will indicate the end of the meeting for worship by shaking hands with each other and with Esther.
Mending broken hearts, rebuilding shattered lives. Quaker peace building in East and Central Africa.
Good evening. My name is Esther Mombo. When the introduction was being done, I was wondering, who are they introducing? But it is me. Tonight, I speak on behalf of myself and Cecile Nyiramana, who, as you have heard, cannot be with us tonight. We worked together on this lecture, and Cecile is very much a part of it. So when I say we this evening, you will know that this is truly a collaborative effort. And the message of this lecture are ones that we both wish to convey. Let me start by appreciating the opportunity to convey to friends in Brittany something of the work that we and many others have been engaged in. We have been grateful for all the support along the journey and for the generosity of friends here. We also are grateful for the support of our own yearly meetings, for our family and friends. This morning I spoke to my mother and she wished me well when I said I was speaking to you tonight. In this lecture, we are going to try to give you a flavor of Quaker peacebuilding work in five countries in East and Central Africa: Kenya, Rwanda, Burundi, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Uganda. Over the last 20 years, these countries have experienced internal conflicts. These have been different from country to country in their severity and their length, and some are still ongoing. Burundi is a case in point, and as we speak tonight, we know that there is fighting and many displaced people in that country. The Quakers have directly affected, have been directly affected, and have been challenged to respond. We believe we have made a difference along with others. There have been some inspiring leaders among us, and we are going to tell you some of their stories. We have drawn on peace-building tools that were already in existence and developed some of our own, and we'll tell you something about this. We can also see several general themes in this work, which seem to us to be applicable far beyond our countries, and perhaps to you. We believe you have invited us here not only to inform yourselves, but also because you can see some of the same themes in your own context. And we hope that some of what we will say will speak to your concerns as well. Our motivation for engaging in peace comes from our personal experiences and also our conviction as Christians following the teachings of Jesus on peace. In Cecile's own words, I say, my involvement in peace comes from the experience of the 1994 genocide against Tutsi in Rwanda. I grew up in a good family with my brothers and my sisters. When pursuing my studies in university, I met my future husband and we decided to get married. Then the genocide came and destroyed so many lives and broke so many relationships between Rwandans who used to be one people. Personally, I lost relatives, friends, and my mother. The genocide left incredible consequences there. Were many widows and orphans, and many properties were destroyed. In addition, there were many separated families where most of the husbands had been arrested and imprisoned, and the others had fled the country. Trauma, suspicion, broken hearts, and relationships were the major issues. The Rwanda yearly meeting started a relief program. Then in 1998, they began a conflict management and healing program. I was among the first group to see the light shining in the darkness. Then as a mother whose husband is still in prison and who lost family members, I was inspired to do something. I was pushed by the hardship I suffered to heal my broken heart and rebuild relationships for the sake of creating a common ground and safe space for the future of our children. This is why I initiated the groups of women in dialogue, which bring together the widows of genocide survivors and prisoners, wives, to work towards reconciliation. I have been doing this ever since 2001. Peace building is my passion. For myself, as a young woman, my grandmother talked to me about the Quakers and peace. She told me that Quakers are people who are not engaged in war. She spoke about how her husband was conscripted to war and died in war. He was taken and told he would not be engaged in war, but support of the wounded. But she still said it was against Quaker ideals to go to participate in war. During the 2007 elections clashes, my brother and my family lost, and his family lost everything because he was living in a place that was not within his tribe. After a long wait in a police station, he found his way to a safe place. Losing everything meant his children could not go to school. And as a family, we had to see that his children went to school. I experienced what lack of peace meant as we dealt with my brother's shock and others like him. Being affected made me to be engaged with peace initiatives in the region. As well as our personal experiences, the motivation for peace is rooted in Quaker belief in the dignity and worth of all human beings because they are created in the image of God. As such, it is not the will of God for people to be oppressed by poverty, hunger, disease, or tyranny. It is not God's will that people in Africa should be the victims of repression or injustice, God desires the peace and prosperity of all. The social conditions prevailing in East and Central Africa are a major hindrance of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Making peace is promoting the activities that will render peace possible, feasible, and practicable. Making peace is removing the obstacles that prevent peace from being realized. Let us begin with a quick picture of Quakerism in our countries to set the scene. It is important to note two things from the outset. The first is that about half the Quakers in the world are in Africa. Most are in East and Central Africa, from where we come, and which is the focus of this lecture. Though there are small numbers in the Southern and West Africa too, the majority of Friends in our region are in Kenya. The estimated number of Friends in the region is 600,000. Secondly, in Africa, the different Quaker traditions of unprogrammed, programmed, evangelical, and conservative meetings converge. There is one unprogrammed meeting in Nairobi, but the majority of meetings in East and Central Africa are programmed or evangelical. Programmed meetings are aligned to the Friends United meeting and evangelical meetings to the Evangelical Friends Church International, both headquartered in the United States. Both the programmed and evangelical Quaker meetings in Africa emphasize the centrality of Christ and obedience to the teachings of Scripture, and the meetings employ pastors. Pastors are not hireling priests. They are a combination of what Friends in Britain would call elder, overseer, recording officer, recorded minister. All the Quaker meetings gather together in Africa section of the Friends World Committee for consultation. It has regional headquarters in Nairobi. The first Quakers in East Africa came from Britain and they settled in Pemba and worked with freed slaves. They were followed by American missionaries from Indiana who arrived in Kenya, which was a British colony, in 1902. Tanzania was a German colony, Rwanda, Burundi, and DRC were Belgian colonies, and Uganda was soon to become a protectorate. The British colonial government permitted American Quakers, Edgar Hole, Willis Hotchkiss, and Arthur Chilson to establish a mission station in Kaimosi in western Kenya. Over the next 60 years, the number of Quakers grew substantially, and schools and hospitals were established. Friends Theological College was established in 1942 to train pastors to work in the growing Quaker communities. Among the first students was a woman, Rasoa Mutua, who became a key preacher and teacher of women in Kenya. Through mission activity by American and African Quakers, Quakerism spread to other countries in Eastern Africa, the largest concentrations being in Burundi and Rwanda. The Quaker meetings in Burundi was founded in 1934 under the guidance of Edna and Arthur Chilson, who had left Kenya in 1927. From Burundi, the Quaker Church was established in Rwanda by George Morris and Doris and Willard Ferguson, former missionaries to Burundi. The Evangelical Church of Rwanda was founded in 1986 and given legal status in 1987. Many people saw this as a miracle because of the difficulties involved in registering new churches in Rwanda. Missionaries assumed the main leadership positions at first, but soon handed over to the Africans. The distinctive features of Quakerism in Rwanda is the practice of water baptism. The Quaker Church in DRC was founded in 1981 by missionaries from Burundi. The Quaker meetings in Tanzania were founded by Kenyan Friends who migrated there. Quakers settled on the margins of the Serengeti Game Reserve. As well as getting land, they founded the first Quaker meetings, which were later supported by the then East Africa Yearly Meeting. These meetings grew to become the Tanzania Yearly Meeting in 1980. The Quaker presence in Uganda also began with friends from Kenya, and Uganda Yearly Meeting was founded in 1980. It is significant that the first 50 or 60 years of Quakerism in East and Central Africa were the final years of the colonial period. The process of colonization varied between countries, but it often heightened ethnic tensions, such as those between Kikuyu and other tribes in Kenya, and between Hutu and Tutsi in Rwanda and Burundi. These tensions have remained aspects that Africans have had to deal with in relation to peace building. Conflict and violence is what characterizes most of the continent, and our region is not exceptional. For a period now, ethnic relations-related violent political conflicts have been experienced in the following countries, where Quakerism is a part of the Christian tradition: Burundi, Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, Uganda, and Kenya. Tanzania is exception. From the 1980s to the 1990s, Rwanda came into the international spotlight for a host of reasons, including ongoing conflicts, a record of severe human rights abuses, and the actions of successive governments that seriously violated the rights of citizens. With impunity, the ethnic divisions were further enforced through the enacting and implementation of dehumanizing laws and policies, inequality of treatment, and differential access to amenities, basic services, and the protection of the state. As a result, many Rwandans left the country as refugees, settling in neighboring states and further abroad. In 1990, the Rwandese Patriotic Front, based in Uganda, began a war against the Kigali government. This caused political instability, higher levels of poverty, infrastructure destruction, and internally displaced people. In 1994, an estimated 800,000 Tutsi and moderate Hutu were killed, and 2 million refugees fled the country in one of the most brutal genocides of the 20th century. In 1995, the UN called for an outreach program to help prevent future acts of genocide. The Day of Remembrance of the Victims of the Rwanda Genocide has been observed in April each year since 2004, 10 years after the genocide took place. Many people around the world hold memorial ceremonies that include candle lighting and a minute of silence to honor the victims of Rwanda Genocide. The UN Day is also a time for diplomats and key community figures to talk with communities about the atrocities of genocide and the importance of working towards peace, peaceful way of life. Student conferences, exhibitions, and other commemorative activities are also held. Burundi has experienced intermittent internal conflicts for many years, and this has recently begun again, after a period of relative calm. As we give this lecture, the situation is volatile, with many displaced people and the deaths of some. Dialogue appears not to be making any headway. In northern Uganda, the conflict in the Acholi district caused by the Lord's Resistance Army began in the 1980s. Many were killed, and many children were kidnapped and forced to become domestic slaves or child soldiers. The aftermath of this continues, with many traumatized people needing ongoing support, as we shall be showing in the testimony of Great Kichoncho later in this lecture. On the whole, Kenya has been a relatively peaceful space, but the 2007 post-election violence threatened this profoundly. Within a few days, more than 1,000 people had been killed and over 600,000 rendered homeless, while a significant number were forced to flee their homes and became internally displaced people. The issues behind this conflict were to do with ethnicity, failed political processes, and economic disadvantages. In all these countries, in recent years, many friends have responded with peace-building initiatives. Until these various conflicts erupted, we, like many friends around the world, had been living peaceful lives, helping each other and our neighbors in various ways, without drawing much attention to ourselves. But some of us have been forced out of our comfort zones and been called to do so much more. We have interpreted peace building very broadly, since as Christians we recognize that peace is not simply the absence of war. It has to do with justice, reconciliation, healing, and forgiveness. Many Quakers in the region have engaged in different forms of peace building. Some of us have worked to resolve conflicts, and some of us have focused on post-conflict trauma, healing, and rehabilitation. Some of us have worked to ameliorate the conditions which give rise to conflict by meeting basic needs such as food and shelter. Some of us have worked to make society function more equitably. For example, through nonviolent campaigns aimed at reducing discrimination or by developing peace education or through election monitoring and developing civic skills. Creating work opportunities, especially for young people and women, has been another strand. An important aim of our peace building has been to help communities to heal and be reconciled to each other so that they grow together as communities. Violence causes segregation along identity lines, with individuals and groups becoming isolated and exclusive, claiming that they are only safe when with my people. As Quakers, we embark on peace building to help reconcile people to God, to neighbor, and to nature. Our work begins with dealing with the hurt, not only at the individual level, but healing at all levels of society for lasting peace. We do this because conflict in our region is rooted in the politics of exclusion, in which people find themselves denied their identity, their freedom or resources. As a result, people react. Change or transformation of the main of pain stems from faith. If healing is to bring people and communities together across cultures, the first step is forgiveness. Reconciliation, therefore, means creating new relationships, and this begins with healing past hurts and framing a vision for a better future. It is against this background that several diverse ways have been used in peace building in the region. We will now turn to describing some of the tools we have used, along with examples of situations where they have been helpful. One of the tools we are using is conflict management. In conflict management workshops, individuals and organizations are taught skills for dealing with interpersonal disputes without the aid of a neutral third party. A complementary tool is mediation, which does involve a neutral third party in resolving disputes. In Rwanda, some of those trained go on to become volunteer mediators with Friends Peace House, which was founded to do this work and has received many requests for training in conflict management and mediation. Mediation has been successfully used to help reconcile survivors and offenders from both ethnic groups in Rwanda. It has also been taught in Quaker primary and secondary schools to reduce conflict between students, teachers, and parents committees. It has contributed a lot to promoting the culture of peace in Quaker schools. It has been extensively used in Burundi, as in this testimony.
I am Levi Nkumana, founder of MIPAREC, the Ministry for Peace and Reconciliation under the Cross, and the national coordinator of Sangwa Mahoro in Burundi. My country has been ravaged by violent ethnic conflict from 1993. There were two options for young people: joining the armed groups or go for peace building. Since then, MIPAREC started to contribute to peace building by equipping young people in conflict management and mediation. Many peace committees were born and have been able to mediate within the communities, successfully bringing together people from different ethnic groups using the tools of conflict management and mediation.
Providing conflict management and mediation was not enough in communities like Rwanda, Burundi, DRC, or in Kenya. There was a need to help people to constructively address their own violent feelings. This is why the Alternatives to Violence Project has been another valuable tool for us. It was brought to us by friends from the United States through the African Great Lakes Initiative, usually known as AGLI. AVP workshops focus on seeking that which is good in ourselves and others, and on cooperation, community building skills, trust, respect, and inclusiveness. They foster communication skills, deep listening, speaking with clarity and responsibility, all leading to conflict transformation. AGLI introduced AVP in Rwanda in 2001, Burundi in 2002, and Western Kenya and Nairobi in 2003, and Eastern Congo in 2005. These programs now all have local experienced trained AVP facilitators and lead facilitators who can offer advanced workshops and training for facilitators. AVP teaches people that they can choose to respond to violence by active nonviolence. This tool has helped prisoners, grassroots leaders, and the local government, and also many Gacaca judges in Rwanda. In Rwandan tradition, Gacaca, a word meaning justice amongst the grass, is a form of truth and reconciliation and restorative justice, which was adopted in 2001, following the 1994 genocide. The genocide led to the deaths, torture, rape of an estimated 800,000 people, and there was a need to develop an effective way to try the more than 100,000 people accused of genocide and war crimes. It was estimated that it would take more than 100 years to try such a massive number of accused using existing justice methods. The solution was to adapt the Gacaca system to work in concert with the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda to ensure that justice was speedily but also fair. The Gacaca court system necessarily evolved to fit the scenario from its prior form. The Gacaca courts are designed to promote communal healing and rebuilding. Rwanda has especially focused on the community rebuilding, placing justice in the hands of the trusted citizens. Though these judges had been trained, it became clear that they needed peace-building skills. That's why Friends Peace House decided to use AVP to build their capacity to seek that which is good in others, and to work on cooperation, building trust, respect, and inclusiveness. They also learned communication skills. This was in Western Province, Goma District, and equipped the judges as well as community leaders, as mentioned in the following testimony.
I am Cicely Massona from Rwanda Friends Peace House. I remember when we organized AVP training for the community leaders from Ngoma District. The Vice Mayor of Good Governance told us that AVP is a tremendous tool for good governance. The skills we have now will help us to respond peacefully in a situation of violence, he said. It will as well help us leaders to treat peacefully those who are coming to us. We will be able to listen and understand them and find ways to solve their problems. We are grateful for this important tool for peace. Also these days, AVP is helping prisoners in Rwanda. Most of them are confessing, saying that they have never realized that there is an option to respond to violence by non-violence. If they should know AVP before the genocide, they would not be in prison. They are promising to use AVP principles in prison, their families, as well as in their respective communities when out of prison.
One major consequence of tribal and ethnic conflict in Africa is deeply wounded and broken hearts. It would be impossible to reconcile communities without considering the unhealed wounds and the deep traumas many have experienced. This is why a new tool was developed in Rwanda and Burundi, Healing and Rebuilding Our Communities, or HEROC. This program takes 10 people from one side of the conflict and 10 from the other side for a 3-day workshop. In Rwanda and Burundi, this means Tutsis and Hutus. HEROC believes that in every person there is something good. This is a radical notion in societies where most members have witnessed neighbors and even family members committing gruesome acts of violence, and where both victims and perpetrators of violence experience trauma and its after effects. Healing from trauma and building peace between groups are deeply connected. It is not possible to successfully do one without the other. Trauma healing and peace-building efforts must happen simultaneously. HEROC slowly builds trust within the group as the first stage. It is common for participants to be wary of attending workshops, fearing they might be a trap or where they will be attacked, sent back to prison, or killed. Through experiential activities and cooperative exercises, participants begin to relax, opening the way to the second stage known as remembrance and mourning. In the workshops, a forum is created for participants to pay tribute to their losses and to share grief with others. This process helps to humanize the other, leading to the final stage of reconnection. Many program participants report having felt very isolated in their grief and their reactions to trauma they have experienced. The workshops became an important first step in realizing that they are not alone. As one recent participant, a genocide orphan, wrote in our evaluation, "I was thinking that I have nothing in me, but I found that I can even use my wounds to heal other people. And I found that there is a good thing in every person, even though he or she is full of trauma and problems." Another important aspect of reconnection is the process of rebuilding relationships across the lines of Hutu and Tutsi, thereby strengthening the fabric of communities torn apart by a long history of violence. The testimony of one participant illustrates this.
I am Solange Maniraguha from HEROC Rwanda. Firstly, HEROC helped me to heal my heart's wounds. It is not easy for a broken heart healer to listen to someone traumatized. But what I like from Hirok, it is helping to discover yourself, recognize your wickedness and trauma, rehabilitate yourself, then try to help those who are in need of healing. In addition, Hirok helped to heal the wounded hearts, forgiving each other, and then getting reconciled. For example, in Gisenyi community, two families reconciled successfully. One survivor and a released prisoner who attended Hirok training decided to forgive each other, and now their families became real friends. They are helping more people in forgiveness and reconciliation.
And there is another testimony from Grace Kichonjo from northern Uganda concerning work with child soldiers who had been forced to serve in the Lord's resistant army and also with their victims.
Through my involvement with soldiers, I found they were fearing and anxious. They were just like the victims. I realized that what the government would say, or what the rest of Ugandans would say, about child soldiers or their victims, was different from the real experiences that the people were having. And later, we did some work managing anger, and a lot of the people, even those who didn't read or write, were able to express themselves, their anger about the things that had happened to them during the war. And so much was related not just to the experience then. A lot of them went very far back in their lives to their childhoods. So connecting to people's real lives more and more gave me the impetus to continue in this work. Much later, in 2013 or 14, I started doing the healing and rebuilding communities work, again in northern Uganda, with people from the Lord's Resistance Army War. I wouldn't know how to describe it, because there were times you would get in a room and somebody would tell their story and start screaming and crying. And I would think, how are we going to manage? We only have 3 days. People are screaming. They are showing there is a lot of pain. Are we just not going to leave them with open wounds? But that short time, rebuilding community, having people share together, see that there are other people with pain, allowed healing to take place. Friends are among the people in this world who are still doing great work, who still believe in not necessarily publicizing themselves, but working from their hearts and continuing with whatever group of people it is, whether poor or rich, in their simple way, doing great things, extraordinary things.
We know that addressing the root causes of conflict is better than dealing with the consequences of conflict. Poverty is one hindrance to sustainable peace. A new tool trains people in entrepreneurship and to set up saving and credit programs to reduce poverty, including microcredit schemes. This tool is used to change the mindset of the community in terms of economic empowerment, to open up their eyes to what they can do, provide sources of startup capital, and show them how they can work together to generate an income to improve the standard of life of their families. Economic empowerment contributes a lot to sustainability of the peace work. For instance, in the community of Bugesera in Rwanda, survivors and released prisoners got trained in Hirok and AVP and now construct houses together. They stay together, living in the same neighborhood, and were reconciled and forgave each other. Now they are still working together to share in the country's message of forgiveness and reconciliation. The final tool to mention is Turning the Tide. Turning the Tide is a training program developed by Quaker Peace and Social Witness. It aims to help people use the power of nonviolence to turn the tide of injustice, oppression, and disempowerment, and to build an inclusive, sustainable, and fair world. They offer workshops, speakers, advice, and resources. The Turning the Tide website described nonviolence thus. Nonviolence is a way of activity confronting injustice. Not doing nothing, not responding violently, not running away, but struggling creatively to transform the situation. It's about doing conflict better, bringing about change without doing harm. Turning the Tide has been working in Kenya since 2009 to help local activists stand up for human rights and social justice. Turning the Tide has also worked in collaboration with the East Africa Peace Building Program, another initiative of the QPSW, that provides an extensive program of training courses teaching nonviolent direction action in Kenya. Turning the Tide has been extended to Rwanda in partnership with the Rwanda Yearly Meeting and to Burundi in partnership with MIPAREC to encounter local peace activists to make their voice heard while advocating for human rights promotion as well as social justice. Here is an example from Rwanda.
I am Daniel Nietzsche-Remier, one of the Turning the Tide workers. In Rubavu District, Western Province, the community-based nonviolence campaigns have already been started by the resource people. They identified a case of injustice against an orphan of about 17 years old who had been raped by a neighbor. She got pregnant, and then the family decided to keep quiet. Her stepfather and the neighbor decided to hide her in a family room prison until they found a way that she could abort. The TTT resource people mobilized the community, shared the case, and then got more information about all the forms of injustice that had occurred to this orphan. Once the TTT agents got the information, they decided to work with the local governance leaders to plead and advocate for the girl. Then they came together with the community and talked to the girl's family, asking them to free her from the prison where they put her. The TTT resource people took this girl to hospital and reported to the police. Now the girl has a beautiful baby girl, though she is traumatized because of what she went through. In addition, she is followed by the counselors who are helping her to recover. She is very thankful to TTT, which advocated for her until she found justice.
We finished this section about tools with some general points about them. All of these different tools have been translated into local languages to be domesticated and be more effective. They can also be adapted to meet the needs of the community concerned. The tools do not have to be used on their own. They can often be used together in the same community to great advantage. This happened with a group of women in dialogue in Musanze who went through the healing process, got skills on alternative to violence and on conflict resolution and prevention. Then they were given skills in entrepreneurship. Today, the women are still working together on peace and development. In the Kenyan situation, during the post-election violence, people in most parts of the Rift Valley were displaced and forced to live in camps as their homes were burnt down. Discussing friends' responses, the late Joseph Mamai, who was then the presiding clerk of the Friends Church, has this to say.
We came together and asked ourselves what we could do as a peace church. The first thing we did was to attend to the physical needs of the people affected, before we began looking into other needs. After dealing with the physical needs, we knew that we had to move on to another level. We knew that life would not be sustained in the camps, and people had to go back to their land and homes. But the homes had been destroyed. For the government, it was a decree that all the people should return to their farms. But listening to the people in the camps, they were not ready to return, and the others in the villages were not ready to receive them. One of the issues was the new identities that people had acquired in the name of perpetrators and victims. This language was both intimidating and creating more animosity between the two groups. Instead of using the two terms perpetrators and victims, we chose other words to represent the two groups. For those who had evicted the people, we called them the receiving group, and for those who had been evicted, we called them the returning people. We set a day to meet the people in each of the camps and together discuss the mode of returning and the ways in which they would be received. After days of discussion, the two groups agreed to return and to be received. The receiving team accommodated the returnees and helped them to rebuild their houses.
Sometimes people adapt one tool to include others, as the Burundian friend observes.
I am David Nyonsima from Tars, Burundi. I am using the Alternatives to Violence project as an approach because I found that it puts together the healing model, the prevention of violence, and the transformation of conflict.
In situations of conflict, peace builders have always dealt first of all with the immediate needs of those who are affected. But once that has been done, reconciliation and rebuilding are vital so that shattered lives can be rebuilt. The root causes of conflict in our region include a destructive style of ethnicity, denominationalism, political and economic leadership, a frustrated democratization process, inadequate international cooperation, corruption and poverty, to name just but a few. These causes are both internal and external, and they are both historical and contemporary. Kenya well illustrates these root causes. In Kenya, the colonial and post-colonial boundaries have remained the same. These boundaries reflected both ethnic and denominational segregation. For example, the Presbyterian Church of East Africa was established in Central Province and is ethnically identified with the Kikuyu. The African Inland Mission is in the Rift Valley and associated with some of the Kalenjin communities. The Quakers, originally established in Western Kenya, are identified with some of the Luhya dialects, for example, Maragoli, Isuka, Tiriki, and Pukusu. This ethnic and denominational segregation feeds well into negative and power politics when politicians capitalize on the politics of exclusion and marginalization, the we and them syndrome. Political syndrome that brings about divisions based on a negative view of the other, encourages animosity and lack of trust of the other. The other's image is portrayed as that which will take over and rule in a terrible way. The other is portrayed as one that will not share the resources with all. The other is portrayed as evil. In this situation, the youth are manipulated and used to fight each other rather than asking questions of the politicians about what structural plans they have for enhancing growth. When peace builders address the root causes, they can help people to better understand the dynamics of conflict. In doing this, one does not shy away from naming the historical grievances around cultural, ethnic, social and political tensions that continue to rock communities. In addressing the legacies of historical injustice, peace builders are engaged in deeper dialogue about recurring intergroup tensions and are rebuilding trust. The quality of leadership is one such issue. During her Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech in Oslo on 10th December 2004, Kenyan laureate Wangari Maathai said, "I call on leaders, especially from Africa, to expand democratic space and build fair and just societies that allow the creativity and energy of their citizens to flourish. Those of us who have been privileged to receive education, skills, and experiences, and even power, must be models for the next generation of leadership." The challenge that Wangari raises is not uniquely African. There are other places in the world with similar issues. Since we are talking about one region where the Quakers are engaged in peace building, we will illustrate it from that angle. Our region has been through different constitutional changes, and each of the constitutional processes has included the period politicians can stay in power. The terms vary, but one of the root causes of conflict is people remaining in leadership positions for a long period of time. This creates fear and does not encourage growth or healthy opposition. The cycle of poverty and all bad leadership can lead to election violence, as propaganda, fear, and intimidation are used to silence any voices that are contrary to the voice of those in power. One would conclude that lack of good governance contributes to many of the conflicts in our society today. In addition, the obstacles to the achievement and the maintenance of peace and good governance across the region are embedded in patriarchy as exhibited in practices that thrive on discrimination and exclusion on the basis of age, gender, ethnicity, or religion. The Christian Church is not free of these problems internally, and the Quakers are not either. Using the different methodologies to approach peace building among Quakers, for example, is a safe space to begin. Within the same tradition, people are able to address difficult issues, often avoided, that cause recurrent tensions or prohibit healing. Free from outside judgment, the use of familiar language and the history for self-critique and constructive inner work is a source and example of peace work. Poor sharing of natural resources is another root cause. In discussing peace building, one cannot avoid the issue of reconciliation to God, neighbor, and environment. In our work, we discover that poor sharing of natural resources breeds tension, conflict. The election of leaders is based on how the natural resources will be divided and what one region will get over the other in a given context. Poor sharing of natural resources breeds conflict. In places like DRC, which is rich in minerals that would bring good revenue to the country, conflict and war has made it hard for people to benefit from what is within their reach. Instead, the communities are embroiled in conflict, and the leadership of the land and those from outside benefit from the natural resources. The leadership is capable of stopping the wars and creating governance that supports and benefits all. However, the leadership benefits from the natural resources while the masses fight. While this is viewed as an internal affair, there are external forces as well, namely the international community, for whom conflict can be advantageous as they can continue exploiting the natural resources. It is true to say that conflicts in Africa and in our region in particular are at times a source of income for various vested interests. Within the East and Central Africa region, there are little or no economic opportunities. The population explosion has produced uneducated youth who are frustrated because of unemployment and who lack capital to start up a business. The challenge of urban migration for better pastures has led to a steady growth of slums where the tensions and frustrations are concentrated. In rural areas, grievances are most pronounced over land access and alienation from land. Most of these grievances are rooted in a sense of ethnic or sectarian marginalization. These grievances have been easily tapped and sometimes manipulated by political elites. High levels of poverty create animosity among people, and especially when they are electing leaders, both in the religious and in the public spheres. Those who experience poverty can be divided into two categories: the marginalized and exploited. The marginalized are those who are outside the prevailing economic system, such as the unemployed, the homeless, the abandoned children, the disabled, and the aged. The exploited are those who are treated unjustly by the socio-economic system. Corruption has also been named as another root cause of conflict when people take what is in the public coffers for themselves and their own families. The scandal of poverty is real in most of the countries in the region and is another root cause of conflict. Each government that is voted to power uses the need to wipe out corruption, but fails to do so and is voted out. So there is a need to work strategically on the political and economic system, involving all people if fundamental change is to occur. Quaker peace building in the region has paid more attention to the grassroots than the strategic context. However, where grassroots work is extensive, it can often come to the attention of the political and other leaders and be adopted by them in some forum. Cecile has a personal experience in this, and these are her words. In 2001, when I started to bring together the widows, genocide survivors, and prisoners' wives, most of my church members told me that it was in vain. But committed to accompany the process of reconciliation, those two blocks who were supposed to be enemies, using the tools like HEROC, AVP, and conflict resolution, the women released their anger and sorrows, forgave each other, and decided to work together to bring a message of peace and reconciliation. Some of their husbands have confessed, been forgiven, have come back to their families, and are living peacefully with the survivors. Today, these groups are serving as a good example of reconciliation in their respective communities. In Kikumbi and Musanze district, they received an award from the National Commission of Unity and Reconciliation for working successfully on reconciling relationships. Another key issue is sustainability, which is closely connected to funding when it comes to peace-building work. When people read about peace-building, the impression often given is that all peace work is based on donor funding. This could be called Project Peace. This is the peace work that is recognized and which hits the headlines. This type of peace work is time-limited and is dependent on the aims of those who provide the funding, so it may not be sustainable. Donor-funded peace work can lead to projects that are not well coordinated and may not meet the most important needs. Sometimes the funds unwittingly change the distribution of power and authority, since the donor may not know the local dynamics. The funds can create division among those who are recipients of it. Donors may not want to work with the local structures, be they religious and or political, and create other structures, which may not necessarily help the affected. Donors often require specific ways of reporting, and reports often have to be tailor-made to suit the needs of the donor. Donor-funded projects support the external desire to do something, anything to help. The ways the funds are raised are all too often dependent on exploiting the images of conflict of people in conflict. These types of projects can be used to justify and enhance an external agenda, which may be tied to the political and economic needs of the donor. This may not be to end the conflict, but to continue having the conflict because it creates jobs for the external people. Donor funding can also create a situation of dependency. When the funds stop, then peace work stops. Donor funding at times is used to bandage the issues rather than deal with the root causes. Don't get me wrong. We are grateful for the help and support of individuals and agencies that can bring resources and expertise, working in collaboration with local communities and agencies. These include projects that have been supported by Quakers from Britain, the USA, and Norway. Their contribution have helped considerably. For example, the Friends Peace Teams through the African Great Lakes Initiatives and supported many projects, including HEROC. American Friends Service Committees has been very supportive to the Quaker Peace Network and the election monitoring work. Quaker Service Norway supported peace building in the region for many years. Britain Yearly Meetings, Quaker Peace and Social Witness has supported a lot of peace building in Kenya, DRC, Burundi, and Rwanda. Turning the Tide is one of their very successful programs, which is bringing the expected change in the region. Different meetings in Europe, including Britain Yearly Meeting and the USA, are supporting schools and peace centers in the region. What these agencies have in common is that they recognize and address the needs that local people and agencies perceive and help local people to better do the work that they are called to do. But a system of peace projects that relies solely on donor money and external agencies is not only dangerous but also unsustainable. It must deal with the local political economic issues as well as the religious, spiritual, and ethical issues. The inclusion of all stakeholders, especially women, is also vital for sustainable peace. Sustainable peace building must include recognizing the importance of initiatives by the people themselves, many of which arise from the bond between the people based on their faith. When people begin to think critically about how Quakers approach the example and teachings of Jesus and what faith in him requires, they realize that they do not need funding so much as a space to meet with each other. That is why there is an increasing number of churches in East Africa doing peace work without donor funding. Rather than waiting for donors, the people choose to develop resources that can sustain their work. These resources include supporting each person to obtain that which they do not have materially. Even when where donor funding is sought, the work is based on much ongoing peace building within communities. This work is done often by women at different levels, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, visiting those who are struck by calamity. This spontaneous work on peace is sustainable because it is based and rooted in community. The motivation for such peace work is based on the belief of the humanity of the other and the command of Jesus that blessed are peacemakers, Matthew 5:9. We applaud these groups that make efforts to make peace on every front, be it at home, church, and nation at large. So sustainable peace work needs to be internally driven with appropriate external support. It is clear that donor funding is limited and often dries up unless there is further conflict. When communities get tired of conflict and choose to make peace, they risk losing support that they have come to rely upon. It is in this connection that a peace worker Masiza observes. I wish peace work was not done as a profession because its link with project is due to money, and this does not come from people's hearts but a job. For Masiza and others, peace has become a profession that pays rather than a way of life that helps us to be at peace with each other. Positive peace initiatives are rooted in the needs of the community and bring different methods of dealing with issues that bring conflict. They teach people how to avoid violence in the first place and how to work with each other in conflict or after the conflict to bring lasting peace. This includes the different and important methods of dealing with conflict that emanate from the Quaker ethos, including those we have mentioned, such as AVP, Restorative Justice, HEROC, and others. Burundian David Nyonzima has this to say.
The piecework we are doing is sustainable in the sense that the workshops we are doing are a form of training which will be duplicated by the trained ones. What makes these workshops sustainable is the fact of moving from the basic training to the advanced training, and that the implementation of the skills and life changes are lived out by those trained, each in his or her constituency.
In this respect, we found the analysis of Diana Francis helpful. In last year's Swarthmore lecture, she observed, "As I see it, peace building as understood within conflict transformation begins from the worldview in which interdependence is the point of departure, orienting people and institutions towards peace building as cooperation, while the worldview that sees life as a matter of eating or being eaten leads to what I have termed pacification." If what Diana is putting across is true, then Masiza's observations are also true. A huge number of peace networks working independently and financially supported by different organizations is dangerous because what it leads to is serial peace conference going, creating desks of peace projects that rival each other, creating reactive spaces instead of proactive spaces to deal with conflict and war. In the East and Central Africa region, some of this has happened and it is unsustainable. Sustainable peace building requires an approach to conflict, violence, and war, where people are able to speak about those issues in forums where they feel safe to speak. Peace processes should be able to move from training in safe places for just a few to being with the people in the places where they are hurting. As well as providing the spaces to discuss conflict, sustainable peace work means including in the training all the people within conflict areas, not just dealing with the leaders who struggle to share power and often abuse it. Men, women, young people must be included in the training for peace and the naming of issues that are leading to conflict in their communities. This is the pattern and example that Quakers seek to bring to this work. Education is an important medium of peace building, and it can bring to light the root causes and contribute to dealing with those root causes. It is an important contributor to sustainability. The establishment of Quakerism in the region was through a fourfold methodology, which included evangelism, education, health, and practical services. Education became a medium of creating communities of people who are different in the way they approached issues. Peace building courses have been offered to numerous groups through donor funding, and as one Rwandan attender observed, "I have over 25 certificates on peace, but they are not recognized in the context of studying." This remark has many implications to it and can be analyzed deeper. However, the education we are talking about in peace building is not one that is for certificates alone. It is also important that it will help inculcate in the learners the values of peace and models of maintaining peace, because it is not just for our own good, but as faith people, it is a way of portraying our Christian ethos. As Quakers, it is our calling and our work. The peace-building short courses that are donor-funded target grassroots people who at times in conflict zones could be victims and or perpetrators. Sometimes the grassroots people do not have any qualifications that can give them status or identity to be able to analyze conflict dynamics. Education is important and critical for peace building, and any funding process should take this seriously. An educated mass is not vulnerable to the whims of politicians who have vested interests in sensitizing the masses to vote for them or to join in battles when they lose. Education for peace is not only formal in seminars, but can take place in different forums, as in the example of Mama Peace.
One day I was travelling from Kakamega to my home in Kiminini. I was in a noisy matatu, travelling to my house, and I heard two young men plotting an attack on a village adjacent to my home. The members of this village were from a different ethnic community from the one the young men came from. They were angry with people from that ethnic community because they had settled in their land and they saw them as intruders who had become rich from their resources. I did not like what I heard, and I decided to engage them in a conversation when the matatu stopped and we alighted. I began by acknowledging the fact that they had issues that were real and painful. I invited them to my house, and we continued the discussion on their pain and animosity to their neighbours, who are from a different community. I listened to their complaints, and in discussion, we agreed that attacking this village was not the solution to their grievances, but we could look for another way. We came to an agreement with these young people that they would not attack this village, and I would not tell the police or the villagers about what they were planning. We became friends with a team of young people and began seeking for solutions about their problems of unemployment. I began organizing seminars for the young people and creatively looking for ways in which they would be empowered with skills in order to support themselves and their families. Today, most of them have joined schemes that have given them work to do and business, and they named me Mama Peace.
Mama Peace's name is Rose Imbega. From the testimony of Rose, it is clear that education should be targeted to those who are vulnerable, as these young people were. It is possible that they had been told that their problems were because of the different tribe settling in their community, which was not true. Mama Peace was able to avert the conflict by helping the young people to understand the dynamics of power politics. Together, they were able to look for a long-lasting solution. The Quaker Building, Peace Building community has embarked on curriculum development for schools, which, while sponsored by Quakers, admit students from different ethnic communities and denominations, and also from different regions. One element of this was to the development of the peace curriculum, which was to be integrated in the school's program. The tools of AVP and HEROC were employed in schools to create a conducive learning atmosphere among students who came from different tribal backgrounds and had been affected by the violence, as well as using these tools to help integrate the students. The development of a draft charter emerged, setting out the values and strategies that French schools should manifest, based on such key themes as peace and nonviolence, truth and integrity, and equality. The peace education that will be long-lasting is one that is inculcated in the whole education program. Finally, it is important for us to discuss the role of women in peace building. In Rwanda, women are leading by example, as you have heard. In Kenya, within the Quaker meetings, women have also led by example. The United Society of Friends Women in Kenya was formed in 1952 as a separate meeting. It helped women to have space to deliberate on matters that affected them and the community. One of these was peace and conflict within the Quaker movement. In Kenya, we have 23 yearly meetings, which most of them split from the original East Africa yearly meetings. These divisions were precipitated by conflicts amongst the male leadership. When the leaders of the yearly meetings were not talking to each other, women from different yearly meetings started a prayer meeting together. The women met in each other's homes to pray and to speak to each other. Some of these women were talking to each other, even if their husbands who were in the leadership were not talking to each other. What started as a prayer meeting of few women grew into a big United Society of Friends Women Triannual in Kenya. When the men saw this, they began coming together to create the Friends Church in Kenya. In this way, USFW was crucial in building peace among the meetings, leading to the formation of the Friends Church in Kenya. Women of all parts of Africa continue to struggle for their empowerment in both the private and the public sphere. Even if some strides have been made in the political, social, economic, and religious spheres of life, for example, in 2015, Monica Dalizu was appointed clerk of Bware Yearly Meeting, and in 2016, she was appointed as deputy clerk for Friends Church in Kenya. The situation of exclusion and marginalization is still the reality. In conflict zones, women have suffered many atrocities like sexual abuse, such as rape. But it is only now that the voices of the survivors are being heard. The little space that has been opened for women in peacekeeping discussions is not comparable to the atrocities committed against them. We celebrate women who have publicly raised issues of justice in local meetings and in different forums seeking justice for survivors. Women have dealt with issues of injustice affecting children in the light, for example, of HIV, AIDS. The community has had many orphans. As a result of teenage pregnancies and children born out of wedlock, many children are growing up in the streets. Their future is likely to be bleak, and they could enter the cycle of poverty and be perpetrators of violence as they are targets for those who plan and execute violence. Women have set up different projects to cater for the basic needs of these children, seeking ways to get them out of the streets and break the cycle of poverty. These women groups focus on dealing with those that are vulnerable in society. Their peace work does not depend largely on donor funding, but on their own initiatives using available resources. Their form of engaging in peace is to empower those whom society has neglected or pushed to the margins, like the orphans, and giving them an opportunity to learn skills for survival. The work of the United Society of Friends Women is important in peace building. Their work in peace building emanates from the knowledge that relationships are important because they hold the society together. Their engagement with peace building is at the level of social justice. The women understand what is needed because of their experiences of injustice within the patriarchal system. It seems to us that peace building is never finished. We celebrate our successes, but there is still much work to do. Peace is a process. It is a way of thinking, acting, and being that characterizes all of us at our best. We have learned a great deal through our experiences, and we pray that we'll uphold and support Quaker peace building in Africa as we continue this vital work.